The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 611, recorded on May 19th, 2021.
The 611th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast, and 444th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dunzer.
I'm Scott Durr.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So, we're going to talk about what we've been playing, and stand back, I'm about to rant. I have been playing Mass Effect Legendary Edition. And to sum up how I feel about it, as soon as I get the achievements, I'm never playing it again. I can't...
How many achievements are there? Because I know you...
Enough. I mean, here's the thing. They're all crammed into one game, so there's far less achievements per game, and they're easier to get. Like, in the original Mass Effect, you had to play 75% of the missions with each character to get their achievements, which means you had to play at least three times. Right? Mm. Here, you only have to do five missions with each, so you're able to do it in one mission. I noticed they left out Rex, and I think that's because there is a possibility that he'll be gunned down in Vermeer. So they may think... Some people may not be able to do it. There is an achievement for an impossible situation like there was in the first Mass Effect, so there's that. So the achievements aren't hard to get. As a matter of fact, I can probably get them in 1.5 playthroughs. But there, if you own Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 in the DLC, there is absolutely no reason to get Legendary Edition. Unless you're really hard for 4K textures. And this game reminds me why technology is not art. You can do all the 4K textures you like, but if there's no art behind it, it's nothing. I'll give you an example of something I just did, like an hour ago, that absolutely shocked me. Absolutely shocked me. Do you know the Shadow Broker DLC for Mass Effect 2? So, in that, there's the mysterious Shadow Broker. You don't know anything about him. The first time you play it, it is freaky, because when you first encounter the Shadow Broker, he is of a species that you never saw before in the entire series. He's a Yogg. But when you first meet him, it's dark. You can only see his silhouette and the strange mouth that he has. A little bit of his mouth. I showed you the picture. That's what he looks like when you first encounter him. It is creepy. It is eerie. It is ominous. He has an impossibly deep voice. You get nervous because you have no idea what this thing is. Because, like I said, you've never seen anything even remotely like it. So in the Legendary Edition, when you first meet the Shadow Broker, he's brightly lit. You can see everything. It is like he's a talk show host for a daytime show. It is shockingly bad. And the only thing I can think of was, you know what they were doing? They were so concerned about ray tracing that they forgot there is supposed to be a mood to this scene. And the mood to this scene is not, oh, there's a Yogg. Weird, ain't it? Imagine if the dollhouse scene from Resident Evil 8 was brightly lit and you could see everything and there was no mystery.
Hmm.
And I know a lot of people say that scene from Resident Evil 8 is the scariest scene they've ever seen, not only in the entire Resident Evil series, but in a lot of video games, you know. And I know TJ knows what I'm talking about. That one level. Right, TJ? I mean, you were scared, weren't you?
Yeah, in certain parts of Resident Evil 3, it's definitely...
Resident Evil 8, Village.
Oh, yeah.
That one scene.
The entire scene that you're talking about is, like, it's a mini Silent Hill game stuffed into a Resident Evil game.
Now imagine if you could see everything and everything was brightly lit and there was no mystery. Yeah, it wouldn't be as scary now, would it? That's what he did to the Shadow Broker DLC. I mean, it's like, what? And you can't really totally fuck up with Legendary Edition. Legendary Edition can't totally fuck it up. Still the same story, still the same character, still the same decisions, still the same action set pieces. I mean, but here's the thing. Why would I do the Legendary Edition if they're going to screw up key scenes? I can just go back to the original.
So, since you could see the whole Shadow Broker, is it just, like, bad details?
No, it's very... Well, here's the thing. It's very sharp details. The problem is, he's not scary if you have him in bright light. Like a lot of horror movies. The only time he's in bright light is when he's dying, when he's getting killed because Liara pulls down that electricity on him. Most of the time, he's in at least half shadow. You can't see a lot of detail. And when you see a Yagen in Mass Effect 3, it's sort of, oh, they're kind of silly. They kind of look silly. And that's the problem, is the Shadow Broker looks a little silly. You see the picture I posted in Skype, right?
Yeah.
You see that picture. Right. That's how it is in the original. That is creepy. What you see in the remastered edition, not creepy at all. And there's a lot of strange decisions that were made in the game. A lot of strange decisions. Some of them I can sort of understand, like when you're being debriefed in Mass Effect 2, the very first thing they do is they ask you, who did you sacrifice on Vermeier and all that? But they don't say, who did you nominate for the council seat? And I think they did that because people can actually say the wrong thing. You know, if they nominate Udina, they can say, I nominated Anderson. Which is, you know, one of the things that amused me, which I found funny that they made a small change in Mass Effect 2, you come upon looters, human looters. They're ransacking a dead Turian's apartment. And Commander Shepard says, no looting. I don't want to see you ever looting again. In the original, he would just proceed to loot the apartment himself. Sort of hypocritical. In the remaster, they removed everything from the apartment, so... one of the things that really irritates me is something I noticed early. All the DLC is included in the game, but it's not free to you in that you have to buy it with in-game currency. Like, let me give you an example. One of the DLC was the Blood Armor, right? The Blood Dragon Armor, which you got if you had Dragon Age Origins, you got this free content. And in-universe, it's because there's a team called the Vancouver Blood Dragons, and they gave them this armor. They sent it to them, and they said, and they had all the description says, and they sent it to them, and there was a, now you have to buy it in Omega. And that just sets up so many questions. How did Omega get this what happened to the armor? I thought they were sending it to Shepard as a gift. Someone stole it and is selling it in Omega? And you have to buy it back? It's just silly. It just should be available to you immediately. I mean, I think they wanted to gamify it so you had to earn it, but that's just ridiculous. It just makes no sense. One of the news items that we're not going to do, but is announced, is that they are going to be, due to high demand, they are working on the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer again. Because, like I said, it wasn't a live service. Well, it was in that you could pay for stuff with real money, but you never needed to. But people just loved it. You know? So Electronic Arts is like, oh, wait, we have to include this. So it's gonna be a late edition. But still, like Morden Solis said, soul replaced by tech. Mass Effect Legendary Edition is only something that'll impress you if you have a 4K HDR TV, maybe. But if you've played the game as much as I have, I know every centimeter of the Mass Effect series. Every single little centimeter. even the most minor changes I noticed. Like, immediately when you're introduced to Matriarch Benezia, in the original game, the camera's right on her tits. And then she coughs, and the camera pans up. It's like she's saying, eyes up here, please. Mm-hmm. In the remastered version, it's just a medium shot of her when she coughs. No joke. There's no joke anymore. And it's kind of hypocritical because the next few scenes just have a medium shot of her showing her how big her tits are anyway. I don't understand what, if you were worried about sexism, okay. Then why are you constantly having these shots that show, yep, she's got biggins. She's a matriarch. And here's the funny thing. I think her tits are bigger in the Legendary Edition. Maybe it's because it's in 4K now. I just don't know. But it's just, you know, like I said, I already own the original. I bought the Legendary Edition chiefly because I like getting massive achievements all over again, but also I was curious to see what they would do. And here's the thing. I will say this, though. If you were to buy the original with all the DLC, it would cost a lot more than the Legendary Edition. So if you've never played Mass Effect before, and you don't give a rat's ass about what was before, and you're going into a fresh... Yeah, by all means, play. By all means, buy it. Introduce yourself to the original series. I just hope there's a Legendary Remastered Edition in which they just fix all the artistic errors and just, you know... And I have a feeling that a lot of the problems I had with Mass Effect 2, say, are still going to be in this game. Oh, that is another thing. They rolled back the grinding. The original Mass Effect 2, you had to grind on planets. You remember this, right? It was a long process just to get enough platinum, to get palladium. Mm-hmm. Then they patched it, and it was a lot easier, and you got a lot more things. Why the fuck did they make it to such a long grind again? Why did they roll it back to the original for grinding?
Are you talking about the planet scanning?
Yeah. Like
the sensors?
Yeah, they bring it back to... Yeah, you're going to have to do a lot more grinding. Sorry. Mm. I mean, the Shadow Broker DLC is there now. But still, it is mind-boggling. Do these people know there's a reason why they patched it in the first place? So that it was easier to get resources from planet scanning? There's a reason they patched it. It's because it sucked. And they just wanted to, you know, make it faster. I don't get it. Some of these changes, I just don't get. Why they make some changes and make changes. Hey, guess what? You know what? It sounds like I'm repeating your complaints about, which one was it? Resident Evil 3? No. No, it was, Demon's Souls. I think I'm repeating TJ's complaints about Demon's Souls. Why would they do this and not that?
Oh, yeah. Like the stuff with, Yeah, that game had a lot of things. It was like, you, at some point, once you've chosen to fix something, you should just, like, go all the way with it.
Here's the thing. The last Mass Effect was in, not Mass Effect Andromeda, I'm talking about Mass Effect. I believe it was 2012, 2013? That's 8 years ago. I'm willing to bet you that a lot of people who worked on Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3 are no longer there. I know the original founders of BioWare aren't there anymore. So I have a feeling that the people who worked on the Legendary Edition did not work on the original version. And that's the main problem. Now, unfortunately, I had to suspend playing Dragon Quest Builders 2. Sorry, Scott. I'm continuing to suspend everything else. I'm only playing MLB The Show and this. And MLB The Show is growing on me more and more and more. The only thing I wish... is that the career mode, the road to the show, is deathly dull. After your minors and your first few months in the majors, it seems like the game just forgets that it's an RPG, you know? No events happen.
Mm-hmm.
I wish more things were happening to my character so I felt like he was doing something. Instead of just pitching in game after game after game. In a single year, I win both the MVP and the Cy Young. I am not a two-way player. I'm just a pitcher. So a pitcher won the MVP. And the game says, okay. It hardly acknowledges I won the MVP. It says, oh, you won the Cy Young, see? And that's about it. Dude, when a pitcher wins the MVP, that far outstrips that actually makes more noise. I mean, when Dennis Eckersley won the MVP, when Roger Clemens won the MVP... You know, usually it's more of a celebration because pitchers usually don't get MVPs. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just dull. And from what I read, the earlier Road to the Shows are a lot more entertaining because they had a lot more RPG stuff going on in them. So, but I'm not going to buy a PlayStation 3 just to play older MLB The Shows. But on the flip side, it's the gameplay is fantastic. And it is everything I could possibly want from a baseball game for now. The only thing I want is, you know, and you know who to blame about this. They had to merge Diamond Dynasty with Road to the Show. And that single-player RPG element is just bland. And tried the League, and it wasn't that interesting either. It's just not holding me. I don't know why. So, yeah. Anyways, what have you been playing, Scott?
I have been playing two games. First one being Fez.
Is this the first time you're playing Fez?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So for those of you who don't know, Fez is one of the seminal, originally XBLA games. It's a platformer, a puzzle platformer, and basically you change perspective, and that's basically what all it is. Is you know you have to change the perspective to gain access to other stuff.
It's really I have to give credit because I think it's very inspired. It changes the way you would view a platformer because you can, as you're changing perspective, you're moving various pieces of platforms closer or farther away, and you can even move your character in a different way. Like you could be standing on one platform and you rotate it and you move a little bit and you rotate it back and now you're on a different platform. It really makes it really different. And the whole game has a very chill vibe because a lot of times platformers, you feel like a little bit pressured. There's enemies around you and everything. Here, you're just solving the puzzles. There's no enemies, no really dangerous. I mean, you can fall to your death, but it's not really that big a deal. You're resurrected pretty much right back wherever you last were. So it's a very, like I said, chill game. It's almost Myst-like in that way.
It all starts with the main character. I know you probably love the main character, that little white guy with a little red fez on his head.
It's a cute little guy, yeah, and he's just jumping around. He's collecting these blocks so he can open doors, and it's a little bit like Owlboy because when it begins, you get this big cube and you start rotating it, and it all goes screwy. So it's kind of like that, and that something goes wrong. And now you gotta go fix it. But your little companion cube thing is like, yeah, it's okay, let's just go fix it. It's like, no big deal, no condemnation, just let's go fix it.
You know what? Fez first came out in April 13th, 2012, and I'm thinking, it feels a lot older than that. Doesn't it, TJ, doesn't Fez feel like a game that was like 20 years ago? It feels like something that's a lot older. I don't mean retro, I just mean I feel like it was when XBLA first launched. So, do you know anything about Phil Fish?
Yes, I saw the documentary. he made three games, this one being his most successful, and then he got a really, really big head about it and started mouthing off to other people and acting like he was the shit and that he could just start being nasty to people and just I don't know, but the game is good. I gotta give that much credit. This is a really good game.
It's too bad Fez 2 will never happen.
Give you the right to be nasty to people. It's just like, wow.
Yeah, he actually quit the entire gaming industry.
Yeah. I hope he's learned and grown since then, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, him and Jonathan Blow. Yeah, Jonathan Blow still makes games though. Although, you know, has Jonathan Blow made anything beyond The Witness? TJ, do you know?
Yes, he made Braid, didn't he?
Yeah, that was before Witness.
Has he made anything after Witness? No.
Yeah, The Witness. Did he do anything after The Witness?
No, I don't think he's put out anything new after The Witness.
Yeah. It's like... And Braid and Fez are two of the hallmarks of XBLA. It's a good thing that Never Dead, was it Never Dead, the name of the development company who did Limbo? Is it called Limbo Developer. Playdead. Right. Playdead, those three games were basically the backbone on which XBLA was really made. Those three games were the ones that elevated XBLA into something that people, oh, what's the new XBLA game? And then people started going nuts about the Summer of Arcade. I miss the Summer of Arcade, but I guess every day is the Summer of Arcade now. At least on Steam. It's when indie games are rare on a console. Now you can't swing a dead cat without hitting an indie game. Fez, I never completed Fez, but that's not because I didn't want to, it's just that it just got too much, it's just too big, you know?
It's a big world, but you have a map to keep track of stuff and portals to...
Yeah, but you also have to do all those collectibles, and you have there's a lot of backtracking, which...
Yeah.
I mean, I do mind backtracking. But, I mean, you know, Fez, even though there's a lot of retro games, Fez really hasn't been recreated in terms of look and sound. And, oh, yeah, don't forget the music, either.
Oh, yeah, that's what it's part of the vibe, it's part of the chill, it's very relaxing, calming, and beautiful, and it just transitions from place to place, and I was moving around very fluidly, I never really got stuck anywhere, there was always somewhere to go, when I can just come back to an area, you know, if I feel like it, and it feels like, I haven't gotten that far yet, I'm only like 3 hours in, but it feels like, I don't know if it's like typical platformers where you get abilities as you go along, because there's some spots I just couldn't get to, even if I was rotating it. I don't know if there's. Like
I think so. I don't remember well, but you know, the composer is Richard Vreeland.
Okay.
He was a chiptune artist for a long time, and he finally got his big break in movies in 2015 when he made the score to It Follows. And here's the thing that just, you know, he's only 34. He's only 34, so it's like he has a long career coming up.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, going backwards. He started making video game music in 2004, which means he was 18 when he started. Jeez. So,
He evidently followed his passion. That's really good.
Yeah. And, what else did he do? I know he did, he also did, well, he's doing Solar Ash Kingdom, which is in development right now. That's what he's currently doing. Anyways, are you still playing Trails in the Sky?
Yeah. I just finished a replay of Zero, and Azure is coming out. The translation is coming out on the 22nd. So when that comes out, I'll be playing Azure. Okay. That'll be the fifth game in that series. And it's now coming up to 11 games. Trials from the Beginning, I think, is coming to Steam, as well as other consoles. And Trials to Black is another new one that's coming out. So that'll be like 11 total. So this is a long series. And you have all these little story arcs, but it's like the same world. So it's really refreshing each time because you're different characters and different stories going on. So it doesn't really get stale, at least. You know, it breaks things up.
How about you, TJ? Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say the other game I was playing was Bloodstained Ritual of the Night.
Okay, so Castlevania Redux.
Yes, it really is. I started playing
it. Well, it's by the same guy.
It's like the theme is half Castlevania. I can hear the Castlevania portion in there. I'm like, how are they doing this?
Okay, so here's the thing. Bloodstained is basically all of the Castlevania smushed together, all the ideas, and yep. Added some, like you have Order of Ecclesia in there, you have, yep. You know, the other ones in there, you know, and it's made by the original guy. It's basically Mighty Number 9. Basically, it's like, you know how Mighty Number 9 was, well, we're not making Mega Man, wink, wink, well, this right. Was, we're not making Castlevania, wink, wink. Look at the name. What is it? Bloodstained,
Ritual of the Night.
Right. Doesn't that sound a little bit similar to Castlevania Symphony of the Night? So.
Symphony of the Night, yeah. Oh, and the map looks like the map, it looks like it has that blue little background with red little safe spots.
And, yeah. Well, it's totally not Castlevania because the main character is a girl, not a guy.
Yeah. Well, there are a couple Castlevanias where the main character is a girl. Like
no, it's an alternate character, though. It's an alternate character, no? It's not. You're not starting as a girl.
She's the Order of Ecclesia is the, that is the main character. It's a woman. Okay. I forgot her name now. But
well, it's not Alucard. That's for sure. The main difference is that when you get stuff in Bloodstain, you can actually see it on your character.
Yeah, that's cool. Actually, you could change your outfits in Symphony of the Night. You could change your cape and just the weapons you would see. I don't think the armor changed, though.
But yeah, there was a thing in a bunch of the Symphony of the Night and Game Boy Advance era Castlevania games, was that, like, you could see some cosmetic differences in capes and armors, and it mostly was just palette swaps, but weapons in particular were entirely cosmetically different. Like, you could have a claymore, or you could have, like, a sword that had, like, a blood effect to it.
You know what's interesting is that the spinoff is even more popular than the main game, the Curse of the Moon games.
Yeah. Well, because that one goes full retro, back to the 8-bit era, and you play Zangzix 2, or I think that's his name. And that, you know, it feels even more Castlevania then. But at least the music was different, so it didn't feel like they just used the song. It's like there's the vibe of Castlevania, and then there's just straight music, like the song notes. Like, I know this is the Blood of the Night theme or something. It's like, it's crazy.
I wonder if you're going to be enjoying Bloodstain if you're ever going to play Blasphemous.
Oh, good lord. That one. I saw that. Oh my god. That's just, wow. The guy just put the helmet on and he just gets blood spurred out.
That game is incredibly morbid from top to bottom.
Yeah. Wow.
But more importantly, at least the gameplay is sound.
Yeah.
But still, yeah. That is Catholic Guilt the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm actually half serious there because it's made by Spanish developers and they're trying to really invoke the Inquisition and all that stuff and mm-hmm. Killing people is actually doing them a favor in that game. So.
Yeah, pain is repentance in that game.
So, TJ, what have you been playing?
I've also been playing Mass Effect Legendary Edition.
Okay.
I've been playing other things too, but like I do want to mention, like I'm mostly in the first game so far.
Okay.
And dang, They certainly didn't fix certain things about, like, the AI. I have,
No, the AI is still the same.
I run into a husk battle, the husks, like, run in a circle, in, like, a 3-foot circle for about maybe 5 to 10 seconds before they actually run at me.
Having played the first game a couple of weeks ago, and said, yep, that's about it. That's Mass Effect. The thing I don't like is that my character is blonde, but in the first game, it was basically, you know, just yellow blonde. And now they changed it to what it's like, and it's like, in a lot of scenes, it looks like he has brown hair. Because they're doing the ray tracing thing, and it's just not making him look blonde. It's just weird.
You know, it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Also, his hair reflects. It's like it's made of metal.
A double-edged sword is the way that they messed with the Mako. I really do appreciate that boost button because it makes traveling through planets just like so much less of a hassle than it used to be. However, just like, okay, so.
Are you getting stuck in the geometry a lot more?
Secret tip. If you just hold down the boost button, like you can only boost for a temporary amount of time, right? And then it will stop and it will like, you'll have like a temporary moment where it'll come back and then you can boost again. If you just hold down the button, you don't even have to take your finger off the button. You can just hold down the button and you will boost as soon as it comes back. and then it will stop. And then it'll boost when it comes back. And then it will stop. And then it will boost when it comes back. And on one hand, thank goodness for that button because it makes, I haven't gotten stuck anywhere. But if you're going to do that, where I can just hold down the button and do that, why not just let me boost all the time?
Because then it would just be like the hammerhead, and you just have the hammerhead.
But, like, it doesn't... I guess to a certain extent that goes back to my thing. Is like, you were so close. You put it. You put in this feature that makes this doldrum. It's boring. It's boring, Jonah. It's super boring.
You know what's interesting?
Drive around in the Mako.
In the original game, I was able to get all of the resources, and this game, I didn't, and I wasn't gonna go. You know, Hog West. Like usually, if I just visit every system, I'll get all the. I did get all the other stuff. You know, like the League of One and all that crap. But I wasn't able to get all of the minerals, and it was just weird. It's like, why didn't I? Did they make it less? I will say this about Mass Effect, and maybe you might notice it. I noticed it immediately, is that some of the battles they realized were too easy, and they decided to just put more in. And
yeah.
I think it was a play balancing thing. I don't know why they did it, but they just did.
I mean, most enemies that I've come across, I devastate pretty quickly, so I don't know if... There's like one enemy that in the entire game so far...
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's easier. I'm just saying they put more enemies in.
I think there's one enemy in the game so far that I actually had trouble with, and it's the Turian that's, like, shaking down Tali when you're trying to help her, when you meet her for the first time. Because, like, I don't know. I didn't realize how much damage I guess I forgot how much damage a shotgun can do at close range in that game.
Oh.
And he just, like, he runs... straight up to you and
he's
blasts
not shaking her
you.
Down. He's trying to kill her. He's going to take the evidence and then kill her. Because he's working for the Shadow Broker.
Point being, it puts you in close proximity to him, and he has a shotgun, and he can just end you in like two shots.
Really, I never rush in. I'm playing with an engineer, so I just send a few because they all have overloads on them. That's the other thing is that combat in Mass Effect 1. The overloads and the other powers, I think they happen, but you just don't get any feedback, really.
No, yeah. I've done, like, I'm an adept in that game, and it, like, outside of lift and throw, it's really kind of hard to see if warp is ever working.
Yeah. And again, I think that's because of the graphics. They focused on making it 4K and all that stuff. They just forgot interface. You know?
I don't know. I feel like powers were always kind of janky in Mass Effect 1.
Yeah, but when I did powers in, if I did an overload, I knew the overload happened.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to Mass Effect 2, everything's basically the same. So you'll have the same feedback. You're not going to have the same non-response that you have in Mass Effect 1 Legendary. Mass Effect 2, at least when you do your powers, yeah, you're doing your powers.
Yeah. So, I'm just tracking through the first game, making those choices so I can get over to the second game.
I'm going to be interested to see in Mass Effect 3 if you're allowed to holster. Remember, in Mass Effect 3, there was no space for the game. They had no room on the disc. And you could not ever holster your gun. You always had it out. I wonder if now they fixed that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I haven't checked it yet. I haven't gotten there yet either. I'm halfway through Mass Effect 2.
I will say this. I just had a complete brain fart. There was something in particular that bugged me about it that I, besides the Mako... That that's gonna drive me crazy.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Something to do with the Mako. Okay.
The Mako.
The jump jets are a little bit worse too. I mean, they were never great, but at least I could play like it was like Super Mario in the original.
They are basically useless in my opinion in that game. In the remake, like compared to the boost, why would you ever use the? Why would you?
They made the Thresher Moors harder because now you really can't dodge their spit attack. You can just maybe avoid a little bit of it. Because now
I found that the trick with the Thresher Moors is to sit still and wait for them to fire and then move.
But here's the thing. You can try that, but now the range is so wide that it's almost it's harder to do. And they can't jump over them either because they have a range up and down too. And Threshermores are harder to kill now, for some reason. So I don't even bother. There's only one time you really need to kill a Threshermore, and that's when you're investigating for Admiral Kahoku, the Marines that were killed by it. That's the only time you really need. Otherwise, you can just avoid them.
Yeah. I can't remember if there was a cover mechanic in the original Mass Effect 1.
There is. I do feel it's like jankier, much jankier. The thing about, in Mass Effect 2, now I'm just sticking to stuff when I don't want to. It's like, this is not what the cover mechanic is for, stop it.
All I remember is that, I don't know, I just don't feel like Mass Effect 2 and 3's combat system...
You know what I forgot about Mass Effect 1, because I never used it? Is that there was supposed to be a way to sneak, and the sneak doesn't work.
You basically crouch.
You crouch, and you duck walk. Okay. It's the most ridiculous-looking duck walk, and it's completely and utterly useless, because you can't sneak, and, it's weird. So, yeah, I mean, for those of you who already have all three Mass Effects and all the DLC, don't bother with Legendary Edition, unless you want achievements.
I don't know. Like, I'm still having a decent enough time experiencing the story again.
Well, that's just it. So am I. I mean... They didn't change the story,
And also, there are some environments where it's like, oh, that's cool what they did with that. When you come on board the Citadel for the first time,
When you're made a Spectre for the first time.
Or I'm talking about when you just step off the Presidium into the main area, and just look up and see everything. It's the work they did on the textures for that is pretty nice.
Well, It's very hard to fuck up the taxi chase scene in Shadow Broker. Shadow Broker is interesting because the music and the action, it's all 80s action movie. It's like Lethal Weapon all of a sudden with the banter between Shepard and Liara. It's like a nice refreshing break from the rest of the game. So.
Yeah.
The one thing I wish they had changed was I wish you can just choose when to do the IFF, Reaper IFF. Because I would like to have Legion earlier in the game, but if I want everybody to live, I have to get him last.
Yeah.
There are so many things I would... So many better changes I would make. This was just... I hate to say it, but the Legendary Edition was a quick cash grab because of Mass Effect 4 coming. And it's a disappointment. At some point, someone's going to make a different Mass Effect Legendary Edition, which is going to go back to the original and just clean it up.
Either that or they'll take it. I mean, they have been taking in feedback and doing patches on the game, so...
Yeah, I mean, there was another patch, but that was because people... really weird bug. If you had your speaker, your headset plugged in, the game would not boot. You had to unplug your headset for whatever reason. Now it does because they had a quick patch for that, but still, that's an odd bug to have.
I don't know how that would happen.
Neither do I, but there it is.
Yeah. Yep. So that's why I've been playing this last weekend. I've still been working through a second playthrough of Resident Evil Village because there's a lot of stuff you can unlock in that game. But,
But I'm going to tell you something. 2 hours of Lady D is not enough. I'm willing to bet you anything Resident Evil 9, whatever it is going to have her as the main villain, and you're going to deal with her a lot more.
Nah, I think it's good for what it's worth.
No, she doesn't even have enough. Here's the thing. Salazar, at least you had a lot of time with. He was interesting.
You were right to point that out, TJ, and the last time we talked about it, because there's a lot of YouTubers that are like, That's it? She's done? Really? They were surprised. They were like, no, she's
one of four bosses. I mean,
totally shocked.
Yeah. She's one of four bosses. One of them's totally not worth it.
It's because they spent so much marketing on her.
Yeah. Because she's a 9'6" vampire with huge tits. Of course they're going to spend the marketing on her.
Perfect, because you know what it did? It allowed Capcom to pretty much obscure the rest of the game and make it an actual surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, one scene with the quote-unquote Borg scene was a flat line, but the rest of it is pretty good. Oh yeah, but anything dealing with Umbrella and Chris Redfield is just bad. Bad. No, trust me. I have a lot of people who say, "Why the fuck are we involving the Umbrella Corporation and Chris Redfield?" That's what you saw what happened in Resident Evil 5 and 6. Why are you going back to them? And Chris Redfield was not a wanted presence in number 7 either. It's like they're still trying to get people to no, just go in a different direction. You don't have to have things that deal with the Umbrella Corporation. I'm going to tell you something, Capcom. No one gives a shit about the Umbrella Corporation. Everything bad about the series is, you know, and bad by bad, I mean bad gameplay-wise and bad writing-wise, has always involved the Umbrella Corporation.
Nah, that's not true at all.
Oh, really? Do I need to mention the Umbrella Corps?
Umbrella Corps is an entire game of suck, and that has
yeah. Been,
like, you can't put that on the Umbrella Corporation. That's just a bad game.
No, they need to do a game in which the Umbrella Corporation and no one from the Redfield family are involved. Just Ethan Winters and that's it. By the way, someone mentioned something which I found funny, and I said, wait a minute, what? The very first scene, you're with your wife and child, right? Right. And you're sitting around a dinner. Why the fuck is he wearing that outfit?
Who?
Ethan, why is he wearing his camping outfit? His survival outfit. Why is he wearing it to dinner? It's like he was expecting Chris Redfield to come in and shoot his wife, and he has to go out. Why isn't he in regular clothes?
Because he wants to be ready. He's pretty high-strung.
It's like if I went to dinner with my mom, I was wearing hiking outfits in the middle of Manhattan. Why are you wearing that, dear? Oh, just in case I have to climb a building or something.
I don't know. Maybe I'm Spider-Man.
It's like if Master Chief went to the dinner table wearing his outfit, his armor.
No, but is Chris the best part of that game? No, not at all. But like, does he ruin the game? No, not at all. And like, I know I'm
not I don't know. People are just tired of. People want a game in which. See, here's the thing. After Resident Evil 7, people just wanted a game with Ethan Winters, not having to do anything with Chris Redfield, not having to do with and the Umbrella Corporation. Just, you know, just have a new game, a new storyline. Fuck the Umbrella Corporation. You know why they're zombies? Because they're zombies.
No, they tie it in well, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, by the way, that reminds me. They just released the new trailer for the newest Dark Pictures, a teaser for it.
Saw that. That looked very good.
I saw it and I thought, let me guess, it's gonna be another Scooby-Doo adventure in which everything is mundane and can be explained without any supernatural. They're either dreaming or it's a poison gas or it's someone in a costume or someone's trying to scare them off their property. I would like for them to just have, if it's a werewolf, he's a werewolf because he's a lycanthrope. It's not because he's wearing a werewolf costume. It's not because they're dreaming. It's not because they're gassed and they're hallucinating a werewolf. No, I want the werewolf to be a werewolf, damn it. They just... otherwise, you're just doing a Scooby-Doo adventure. It was Old Man Roberts!
Well, I mean, like, not only did the ultimate truth behind the game cover everything that was in the game, it also explained some very important parts of Resident Evil 7 that actually worked quite well.
You're talking about 8?
No, I'm talking about Resident Evil Village explained some very important parts.
That's what I say. Well, Resident Evil Village. Because they have to sneak that 8 in there somehow. I get it. You know, it does explain. But here's the thing. Voltaire once said, the secret to being boring is to say everything. Here's the thing. With Prometheus and Alien Covenant, I didn't give a rat's ass about the backstory of the alien. Who cares? People obsessive, you know, let people invent their own backstories. You know? I don't care about the alien. It's not an interesting story.
Sure, but like, stop them from demanding the backstory. Even
yeah, let nerds do that. I don't care. It's here's the thing. There's a reason why Alien is considered a classic horror film. You know why? It's because no one knew anything what the eggs were. No one knew what the alien was. It's just a creature on the ship. It's not. Here's the thing. A horror movie is not about the monster. It's about the fright. When you explain something, it's no longer scary. Because you know it already. You already know what it is. Say, oh, that's a xenomorph, and they were created on LV-24, and the backstory is that the engineers, blah, 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 blah. Who cares? You know what the best part about Prometheus was? Was the main character going out into outer space to find out the meaning of life and dealing with the concept of death. That was the most interesting part of Prometheus. I couldn't give two rat's asses about the engineers or the aliens or anything like that. I wanted to know more about her. I wanted to know more about David. Although Alien Covenant made me wish I never knew anything about David because they ruined that character. You know, I don't care. I don't need things explained. The most exciting, the most scary things are things that you're given no explanation for. That is, by the way, the meaning of fear. It's the unknown. That's sure. Why H.P. Lovecraft works, because it was all about fear of the unknown. But when you explain the unknown, well, guess what? It's no longer scary. Look at the Borg.
I don't think Resident Evil Village over-explains it.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I don't care about the Umbrella Corporation. I don't care about Chris Redfield because they're explaining. They're exposition. We don't need exposition. Oh, and we're going back to the Dark Pictures. I don't want to hear it was all a dream. That was basically the second game. It was all a dream. Fuck you. Even Man of Medan I liked a little bit more because it was all a gas. It was all hallucinations. At least there was an enemy. It was the pirates, you know. At least there was, you know, but it was all a dream. He was just dreaming the entire thing out of guilt. Oh, fuck you. I don't... That's fucking... You know what kind of story that is? That's College Stoner story. Hey, dude. You ever wonder why you have hands?
Yeah, well, people will disagree, but, like, I felt like...
I
felt like the twist they had worked.
In what? The Dark Pictures?
No, in Resident Evil Village.
Oh, okay. Here's the thing, you know... Well, I'm talking about the Dark Pictures. There are twists I could see a mile away. But here's the thing. Resident Evil 8 has scary moments. It has, you know, about
There's a lot of time that game spends not explaining it.
Four-fifths of the game is really, really good. One-fifth of the game is terrifying. And just a sliver of it is like, yeah, I'm just going to pretend that didn't happen.
Yeah, it's just kind of a lull. And I mean, like, what game can you say that you, like, had fun for like, 100% of the game?
Mass Effect 2.
Even Mass Effect 2 has its drawbacks, and
really?
That fucking ground really. That they patched out of the game and then repatched into the game.
Wait, what?
Even Mass Effect 2 has its drawbacks, and you mentioned one of them earlier, which is that grind that they patched.
Oh yeah, well, you see, that's just a gameplay problem. I'm not talking about, you know. Yeah, here's the thing about BioWare that I don't like. They're obsessed with puzzles. And my answer is, if you're going to make a puzzle game, make The Witness. Or make Fez. You're making an RPG.
I like having some puzzles in there, you know, if it's balanced with other elements.
This is just, we're going to put in Towers of Hanoi, solve it. Oh, by the way, that reminds me.
Slider puzzles. I mean, stuff you have to figure out that's like in the environment that you're standing in. And
I forgot to mention, you might be interested in this, Scott. For the first time in 15 months, I played some Baldur's Gate 3, because I wanted to see how it improved.
And?
I haven't gotten far enough, but the graphics look a little bit better. The choices you have making your character, there are little tweaks in there. But, you know, I'll report next week on, you know, on what I play of Baldur's Gate 3. It's still in alpha, meaning it's not perfect, but, I don't know, it's just...
Yeah, puzzles in Mass Effect 1 is like, we hope you like Simon Says.
you know, the funny thing is that they seem to understand that people were sick and tired of Towers of Hanoi and Mass Effect 1. And they said, well, you can do the Towers of Hanoi or just pay 100 Omni-Gel to skip it. I always make sure I have at least 100 Omni-Gel for that moment. Say, yep, skip.
Yeah, I like puzzles like the Zelda kind of puzzles where they're environmental and you have to, you know, figure out what switches or what levers to do.
BioWare does that too. I mean, like in Dragon Age Origin, when you're doing the gauntlet, you had that stupid bridge puzzle. And I hate it. I always have the solution on a file so that I can just say, okay, this, this, this. And it's just like, I don't care. I don't care. You know what I like in a game? Story puzzles. Verbal puzzles. Puzzles where there is no wrong answer, you say one thing or the other thing, and I know what TJ's going to say. Well, then you better play Disco Elysium. And I plan to play Disco Elysium at some point.
The final cut of that is on PS5 now, and I absolutely need to play that game before the year is done.
What? You have it on PS5?
The final cut of Disco Elysium is on PS5 now, and I absolutely need to do a playthrough of that before the year is done.
Yeah. So I haven't played it. I will at some point. I will. I have to play at some point. Oh, one other game that I'm probably not going to play, even though I'm interested in it, and then that is Odyssey was released today for Elite Dangerous. And the reason is, A, I'm busy. B, Odyssey does not work with VR. And I'm not sure if it's the planet landing part or just the FPS part.
They said very early that they weren't going to have VR support ready for launch.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they'll never be available for the FPS part of the game. You know, in which you're basically doing a deathmatch. But I would like to walk around on the surface of planets at some point. But it's not a must-buy right now thing for me yet.
Mm-hmm.
So. And actually, I've actually put all of Elite Dangerous on hold for now. There's just too much stuff, and I'm still grinding my money because I want to have a big luxury liner. This is a flying hotel. That's where you make the big, big money in that game. Which is unfortunate because I haven't fought anybody, so I can't go to Earth. You need to have in order to visit the Sol system, you need to have a permit from the government, and the government won't give you a permit unless you do some missions for them, which involve shooting people. In your ship. So I can't visit Earth yet. But yeah, Baldur's Gate 3. I like what I've been playing. And whenever it's released, Scott, you'll definitely enjoy it.
I guess we'll have to wait and see. I know they just added the druid. The most recent class they added.
Yeah, I didn't do a druid. I still do my rogue because I like... I like the things that he can do, especially when he's dealing with that kid who's a con artist. If you're a rogue and you're, what's it called, you can, when he tries to con, you can just con him right back and say, oh, I recognize that, and I recognize that. Nice try, kid. Nice try. You fail. Anyways,
definitely
so,
that.
Yeah, so we're going to move on to game news. First game news is... Civilization devs have several games in development that will be revealed this year, and this comes to us from PC Games N. Civilization 6 has had a successful run, and by the way, I'm waiting for the Frontier Pass to drop before I buy it. And Take-Two has dedicated space all over its latest financial report to marketing the 4X game's sales. It looks like big things are on the way from developer Firaxis 2, as the studio has several games to reveal sometime later this year. Firaxis has, quote-unquote, several exciting projects in development that will be revealed this year. Take-Two CEO Strauss Zelnick says in today's financial report. There's no word on what those games are or precisely when that reveal will take place, but Take-Two will be taking part in E3 2021 in June, which will be an ideal place to see whatever Firaxis might be working on next. At 57 million units sold, Civilization is one of Take-Two's best-selling series, just behind Red Dead Redemption at 60 million and Borderlands at 70 million. NBA 2K is at 111 million, and GTA is at 345 million. Civilization 6 alone has sold 11 million units, as revealed during today's conference call. I'm wondering if it's they're going to reveal finally, they're going to reveal Civilization VII.
Yeah, I feel like that's their next game. I don't know if they ever have like an end date where they're like, okay, that's the last Civilization game we're making.
I think the Frontier Pass is the last DLC that's going to be released for it.
For Civ 6.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think each time they restarted Civ, it's been a new director, lead program, or lead designer for that entry. So it'll probably have like a whole different theme if that's what they're doing.
I have one for you. Maybe it's not going to be Civilization 7, but
yeah.
Check this out. Alpha Centauri 2.
Do they have the rights to that? I thought they didn't.
Well, they could have possibly bought that, so I'd be a surprise. But
yeah, it would be.
I mean, Beyond Earth, I did not like. It was very meh. But yeah. if they get the rights to Alpha Centauri 2, I'll be there with bells on.
The problem there, though, is it won't be the original team. It'll be a totally new team, so...
Civilization VI isn't the original team.
Right, exactly. You know, each game is going to be very different, so there's no guarantee that Alpha Centauri will really do what the previous one is. I just feel like people have expectations.
Good Old
like
Games is selling Alpha Centauri, isn't it? I think I bought Alpha Centauri from Good Old Games.
Yeah, I think it might be out though again. But it's like people want Obsidian to make a new New Vegas game.
Well, now they can.
They can, but that's not necessarily going to happen just because all the rights are now in alignment. You know, cause like one of the guys that worked on it, Josh Sawyer, doesn't seem inclined to be working on it.
Yeah, or so Alpha Centauri is on GOG, yeah.
Yeah, so I just don't know, you know, I just think people have maybe expectations that won't be able to be met and they might get disappointed. You know, be careful what you wish for, I guess, kind of thing. I just don't think you're gonna get what you want. Even if they did make it, it just probably wouldn't be the same. It might be too different and they'd get all upset or disappointed.
Firaxis still owns the Alpha Centauri, license, so there's no reason why they can't make it.
I have no idea. I remember people saying that they didn't have the rights to it or something. That's why they.
Or maybe Sid Meier didn't have rights to it.
Yeah, Sid Meier.
Although, to be fair, Brian Reynolds was the one who developed Alpha Centauri, not Sid
They
Meier.
Did say several games, so there could be a lot of surprises.
You know, I did play Alpha Centauri like a few months ago, and it still holds up.
I haven't played Alpha Centauri, but people have talked about it and really enjoyed the AI and the story elements.
It's also as scary as a 4X game is ever going to get.
Yeah.
Some of those wonders, or great projects as the game calls them, like the self-aware city.
Mm-hmm. There could be a Civ 7 and other games as well, so I don't know yet.
DJ, what do you think?
There's absolutely going to be a Civ 7. They'll keep making Civ games and keep making Sid Meier stuff until...
I think it would be in development like a year ago, and I don't think it would be ready. I think the time to announce Civ 7 would be 2022, not this year. And I'm wondering if they might, like I said, announce something that they'd been working on but not really talking about, maybe something like Alpha Centauri.
So you're just going to push all the good games into 2022?
No. Alpha Centauri released this year. Like,
okay.
Announce it at E3 and say, oh, it's this year or next year. And Civ 7 would be 2022 being released in 2023. Do you remember the game Call to Power?
No, I do not.
That was from Activision Civilization. It's called Civilization. Oh, no, not called. Yeah. Civilization Test of Time. Sorry. No, was it Call of Power or Test of Time? No, I think it was Test of Time.
I think that's the latest, yeah.
No, yeah, it was Call to Power. It was Call to Power. Okay. Civilization Call to Power. But a lot of what was in Call to Power ended up in Civilization 4, 5, and 6.
I didn't like it, though. There was just something off about it for me. It was one of those games that was unavailable to purchase until, like, a couple of years ago, too. So you can get it at Steam now.
Yeah. I don't know. Sid Meier's Pirates. I want that.
Oh, yeah. I here's the thing. The original C64 version has never been surpassed. Not even by the later ones. And the one thing I loved about Sid Meier's Pirates is that you had to use a sextant and your map. There was no mini map. You had to look at where the sun was in the sky and then figure it out. You knew where your latitude was, but you had no idea what your longitude was. So you had to look at, you had to find, land and figure out from the land near you and where the sun was in the sky to figure out where you were. And I loved that. There was no handholding. You had to do it like a real sailor.
Mm-hmm.
There was no minimap, no point here, which made finding the Spanish treasure fleet that much sweeter because you had to predict where they were going to be, when they were going to be, and do it without having any sort of minimap and having to just rely on the sky and whatever was near you. Oh, another game that I'd really like to see again is Seven Cities of Gold. Another famous EA game. Did you ever play Seven Cities of Gold?
No, I did not.
That and Heart of Africa were awesome games. And there was a lot of moral choicing in that without it being knocking over the head. Because it dealt with how you dealt with the natives. And if you wanted to, you could just go through and kill everybody in a tribe, or you could trade with them and all that stuff, and it was entirely up to you. And there was no values. The only thing you had was your own sense of personal guilt and the way other tribes treated you from then on. A lot of moral choicing in that one. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what E3 is becoming more and more interesting. You know, because
looking forward to that, seeing what's announced. And
there
what's
are so many
about.
Unanswered questions right now. Especially with COVID and all that stuff. It's like no one knows what's going on. Anyways, yeah. We're going to move on to the next item. Speaking of what no one knows anything, go ahead, TJ. Yeah. By the way, the Apple Epic lawsuit's still going on. We really haven't talked about it. And the reason for that is that it's interesting, but only if you spend like an hour talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there have been some funny things to come out of it. What is a game, Jonah? We don't know, but they're going to figure it out in this case. The Apple versus Epic lawsuit has sparked Xbox Game Pass on Switch rumors again from Nintendo Life. The Epic Games versus Apple lawsuit rumbles on and is throwing up all kinds of unexpected information. Aside from the fact that Epic's Tim Sweeney can't use a Switch properly.
Stop. No, explain that one, TJ.
Yeah, like.
What'd he do?
Again, there have been just, like, all sorts of weird things in this trial, and one of which was they had Tim Sweeney, like, take a Switch and operate it during like, the live video feed of the trial, and it was just, like, it was weird. It was weird to see him fumble with it so much.
Well, he said, as you can see, I'm not a Switch player. And the judge said, well, now the world knows, and that's all right. Neither am I.
Yeah. It was like an extremely hello, fellow kids type moment for Tim Sweeney and the Nintendo Switch. But yeah, we've now been given an indication of just how close Nintendo and Microsoft have been getting in recent times. During the trial, an Xbox business development executive was called to discuss bringing xCloud to iOS, as well as other platforms. Game journalist Steve Totilo has shared portions of the document, which shows sections that have been heavily redacted.
By the way, for those of you who don't know what redacted means, whenever you see a document, you see those long black lines that block out. That's what redacted means.
Yeah, and Nintendo has requested these portions to be withheld as they contain competitively sensitive information about negotiations between Nintendo and Microsoft. Rumors that Game Pass is coming to Switch have been floating around for a while, with Xbox boss Phil Spencer saying he'd love to bring the service to more platforms before changing his mind and then apparently leaving the door open. Nintendo's Doug Bowser seemingly pulled cold water on the rumors late last year.
Hold on one second. You work at Nintendo and your last name is Bowser?
Yeah, he's the guy that took...
You just now realized that, Jonah?
No.
He's the guy that took Reggie's place after Reggie retired.
Yeah.
But still, his name is Bowser?
Yes. I know, isn't that funny? And he's in on the joke. I mean, obviously he knows.
Here's the thing. Mario was named after some guy that Miyamoto knew. Some sales guy or some business guy.
So did you know that Robin Williams' daughter is Zelda? Her name is Zelda, named after the Zelda character. Did you know that?
Yeah, but she doesn't work for Nintendo, does she?
No, but still, it's funny.
One of the funniest things is he went to the Nintendo store in New York and actually took a picture and actually got pictures with the Bowser statue.
Mm. That is cool.
He's very well aware of it. But Microsoft is currently running a beta program that allows Android and iOS users to access Xbox Cloud Gaming on their devices.
Which I use on Android. It's okay. It still needs some, you know, I'm still having a few teeny tiny problems, but to be expected. There's sometimes there's a little lag trying to log on. I really can't play MLB The Show on it because there's a little bit enough of a lag that my perfects go to just late.
I hope that Nintendo and Microsoft are doing some sort of Game Pass that includes Nintendo games because, oh my god, Nintendo, stop rolling random dice on what games to add to your Nintendo Online. Seriously, it's like they keep adding games that nobody's heard of and nobody wants, and they're not. It's like you got Earthbound and all these other games you could be adding, but no, you add baseball, whatever, 1000 and Ninja Caveman thing.
Now
it's
on one hand,
nobody wants these games.
Now on one hand, Joe and Mac are cool, and so is Magical Drop.
You know what'd be interesting? Imagine if it was sort of like two-way street, which Game Pass was on the Switch and the Nintendo version of that was on the Xbox. You imagine people on their Xbox, if they subscribed to it, they would get, you know, Super Mario Brothers or streaming Super Mario Brothers on their Xbox.
I mean, clearly they've been in talks, Nintendo and Microsoft, and they just don't want things revealed yet. Just don't know.
But here's the thing. Even if they decided, we're not going to do it, they still wouldn't want that information out there.
Right.
They wouldn't want the details out there. So. Although I will say this, you know, can you imagine you're on your Switch and you say, you know what, I'm going to play some Gears 5.
Yeah, that would be dope as hell. But who knows? Like, I think on Nintendo's part, they would be, you know how, like, Nintendo is extremely, extremely protective over its IP. Yeah. I don't think Nintendo wants anything on the Nintendo Switch that would outshine Nintendo games. Like, indie games are okay, because indie games are perfectly fine, because you're rarely ever going to have an indie game that ever outsells a Mario game.
Here's the thing, I don't think something like Halo would outshine anything on Nintendo at all. I don't think people who own a Switch are going to say, well, I'm going to start playing more Master Chief over Mario. I don't think it'll outshine it at all. I think the only thing that might outshine it is having Yakuza on the Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's about it. It could be, imagine this on Nintendo Switch, only U.S.-developed games on the Game Pass that are available on Game Pass. Anything that's Japanese is not on the Game Pass for the Switch.
Not even translated?
No,
localized?
None. If you want it, you have to get it from. You have to buy it for the Switch.
Because
remember, the Xbox Game Cloud Gaming is basically game streaming. You can play Gears 5 with top graphics, just so long as you have a strong enough internet connection.
Because Zelda is not going to show up on Xbox, you know, and neither is Mario.
You never know. I mean, I remember when Nintendo was just selling off all their properties, and which is why you have those strange, you have those strange games on the CD based system.
I think it's only going to show up if Nintendo's actually bought out. Then it would, but I don't think that's happening either.
You know what? I am nostalgic for having really wacky interpretations of Nintendo properties from back in the early 90s. I want those back. When CDI had control of Mario and Link on their series. They just had the
terrible Zelda games.
Yeah, but we need terrible Zelda games.
No, we don't.
Yes, we do. They're funny as hell. It's like having the room. Just weird ass.
Yeah. If you want the IP to be completely murdered.
Let me ask you a question. Did that ever damage the brand? I don't think so.
Mostly because I didn't know it existed until.
Oh, years plenty of people later. Knew existed. Trust me. Imagine. But for some reason, I just think it's what Microsoft characters do we want in the next Super Smash Bros.?
I don't know if you knew this, but the artists that made the CDI Zelda games.
Yeah,
made
they were Russian.
King's Quest VII.
What?
And King's Quest VII. For Sierra, they made King's Quest VII. And their animation was still the same. These guys did not improve over that time.
No, they were Russian. They were this Russian group that were cheap.
Yeah. Really cheap and really bad.
And, well, the problem is they didn't have time and they also didn't have many instructions. Just make it fast.
I liked King's Quest VII. There was some genuinely good stuff in that game.
Yeah, but that's the writing, not the artwork.
Eh, so-so.
Yeah. Anyway,
there was some genuinely, like, terrifying things in King's Quest VII.
For all the wrong reasons.
Maybe I've got rose-colored glasses. I just remember, like, that was, like, that was the first one that I played before I went back and played any of the others.
Mm. Wow. First one I played was Part 4, Perils of Rosella. And I played it on a monochrome orange monitor.
Which one was can a video game make you cry? One of them was advertised as can a video game make you cry. It was King's Quest IV, actually. It was the one that had the marketing slogan, can a video game make you cry. That was the princess, her father, dies, if I remember correctly. And
he was sick. He was ailing. Yeah. Because he just suddenly had a heart attack, and the fairy queen, Genesta, said, oh, come to my island, and there's a tamarill, and there's a magical fruit that you can get, and but you gotta get it on your own. I'm not helping you. Go get it. but first you gotta get my pendant, and then go get it and go back or whatever.
But I'm just saying it was, the advertising was, can a video game make you cry?
I didn't remember that, because I just saw the box and I was like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Anyways, so we're gonna move on to the next item.
Babbages.
Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. No Hollow Knight Silk Song news at E3. Well, that's sad. This is from PC Gamer. In an effort not to keep fans in suspense, Team Cherry's Director of Marketing and PR, Matthew Leth Griffin, recently announced on the Hollow Knight Discord that no new Hollow Knight Silk Song announcements or blog posts were planned for their year's E3. Griffin is telling people not to hold their breath, so it should take some pressure off both team and waiting fans. The last thing we heard of Silksong's development came from an exclusive article in Edge Magazine's February 2021 issue. In it, game designer William Pellin and the animator Ari Gibson talked about a completely new environment to play in was the better option for Hornet, whose adventures was originally meant to be a DLC Hollow Knight. With an all-new world, a different heroine, and snappier fighting, it's easier to see how much there is for Team Cherry to do. So basically, there's something coming. They're not ready to show anything. And that's probably good, you know, get development time to make a really good, polished game, not have things rushed, and not have people overworked. Because apparently, that's a really bad thing in this industry that
TJ,
keeps happening.
You're a big fan of Hollow Knight, right?
Yes.
Okay. What do you know about Silksong?
It's pretty much like it started out as a DLC project for the game, and then it became so large in scope that that they decided to make it into its own standalone game. The whole point of it is that there's a character in the original Hollow Knight called Hornet, who is a female bug that uses basically this needle and flies around on thread. And this game is basically, it puts that character, Hornet, at the center of the story and does an entire adventure with her.
Yeah, it's first announced in 2019, too. Wow.
So that's another game to look forward to, possibly 2022 or 2023.
Yeah, people have been waiting on this one for a very, very long time, and like Team Cherry has been extremely quiet about it, which
yeah.
I think they're cautious because they know a lot of people are waiting on this one. You don't want to announce the game and give people expectations and make right. and suddenly end up in a situation where you've got to meet rush to meet a deadline.
This doesn't automatically mean that it's going to be in 2022, by the way. It just means that they don't want to show anything in June.
Yeah, they're not interested in getting people's expectations up and giving them unrealistic
The 2019 trailer looks nice. I mean, it's not like people are pretty confident that.
They're aware of the game. Like, E3 is kind of really about making you aware of stuff that you didn't know was in development or about to come out. So you're already aware of this game being made, and so it's not something they need to talk about at E3 since they want to work on it more, and that's probably a good idea.
It's just that I think fans of the game already know what it's going to look like and how it's going to play.
Yeah,
they've seen they don't need to see any more anyway. They know they're going to buy it when it comes out. Mm-hmm. It's not like they need to promote this game.
Right. That's what I was pretty much trying to say.
Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave a comment on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Charger Moore.
And we will see you next week. And I'm promised to have more. I hope to play a little bit more Baldur's Gate 3 because I want to see what's changed. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.